Live from an undisclosed location somewhere in the greater North Americas, it's time for Gotta Say It with Dr. Marvin Williams and Matt Ryan. The only sports show that goes around the stats, because stats are boring. And now, your host, Dr. Marvin Williams and Matt Ryan.
Hello and welcome to GSI Cast number 5, or as they say in France, Cinco,
no,
the podcast.
Sank.
Oh, sank?
Yeah.
That's the ship. The Titanic sank. We're staying hip. It's Cinco de Podcast. French. With Matthew Aloysius, Octavius Orenthal, Jose, Francois, Ryan, the 17th and a half, and De Deux.
No wonder I feel French in college. je n'ai pas le français.
Si. I'm Marvin Williams. And we're GSI casting from parts unknown outside of Sicily, New Jersey.
We're on the search for the Maltese Falcon.
That's right. And speaking of the Maltese Falcon.
Oy, I think that's going to be the trophy now, isn't it?
I think
so. They're getting rid of the Waterford Crystal.
Nick Saban keeps dropping it. college football playoffs. Amazing that you can have the greatest season. Here's what's interesting. College football, there are 164 Division I franchises. Teams. Shouldn't call them franchises because the players do not get paid. Wink, wink. You have the greatest regular season you could have because every game matters.
Yeah.
You lose a game, you lose a shot at the national championship. And then their championship season, the bowl playoffs, and all that stuff sucks.
Oh, it's terrible. The way they dictate who goes into the championship game was basically you had 8 chimpanzees of various size, 8 weight and height.
Mm-hmm. And Ron Paul.
They all sit in front of typewriters.
Sorry.
Listen to Musicology by Prince.
Backwards.
Yes. Defecate to the rhythm of the Congo drum. and whichever piece of paper they end up falling on ends up becoming the BCS title game.
That's who's in.
Everybody else goes in the Sugar Bowl.
Wait, versus Alabama. So we have this flawed system, and then you have like college basketball, which is opposite. You have this relatively short but boring regular season. Followed by intense March Madness.
It feels longer than it actually is. Right? Because everybody knows that March Madness is
it. That's right. And, yeah. and for those who do not know, March Madness is the college basketball
tournament.
Playoffs, basically.
Yeah.
And the march to the championship that unfortunately happens in March. So we call it March Madness. So there you go.
Yeah.
Cinco de March. So we have this idea about college sports and how much money it actually makes. And college football makes a lot of money for a lot of people. The bowl series, though it blows, makes a lot of money for a lot of people.
Oh,
why?
Of course it
does. Because you're getting this is no stretch of the hundreds of millions of dollars in payoff goes off to between the naming rights for a bowl, the schools that win versus the schools that lose in a bowl versus
the appearance. You're selling everything but the players.
Yeah, and you're basically selling those guys too. You have this sort of outlay of talent, if you would, awareness, if you would, about who's doing what in terms of college football. So now a lot of people have complained about the way the national championship is crowned. So what they have done is they've gone into they've said, okay, we're going to have a playoffs. And now the arguments against the playoffs were, it takes the kids out of school. They're out of school anyway.
It was in the middle of intercession, though.
Exactly. Another argument was too hard to organize where they're going to play. No, it's not. Make the bowl games the play-in games, and then the national championship game would be the best of the final, however many teams are picked, 8, 4, 6, I don't know what they're eventually going to do. So, I will say this about the people who run college football. They got this right. They milked it out to maximize their dollar income because that's exactly what this is about. This is a cash grab.
They weren't giving up that bowl money.
This is
not giving up that bowl money.
So now what you have are 4 bowls. I think they were going to do 4 bowls to 2 bowls to 1 bowl, or 4 to 2. How are they going to do it?
It starts with 8, ends with 2. Okay. That's eight teams.
So 8 teams represents four games to a semifinal.
To a final.
To a final. So that's what's going to become the last of the bowl series now. These sort of playing games of this national championship thing. So and they're going to produce it the way the NFL produces their playoffs and the whole nine. And it's interesting they picked a similar number to what the NFL does with in terms of each league, 8 teams, except you get the bye week for the whatever. So listen, I do not blame them for doing it this way. No one's going to win anyway, except those who have financial stake in this whole system. And guess what? They're going to get paid big time. And you know what? Right is right. They do have the most exciting regular season of any of the college sports. Why not make an exciting end of regular season championship series way so you can get some of that, keep that energy going? It's not just a waiting game until whenever the national championship game is played on March 19th or 18th, whenever they play the night. Well, I don't know.
January 7th.
Close enough. So.
Right year.
Yeah, well, you know, eventually. So there's going to be a committee of 42, I think I read. 42 people on this national championship committee, men and women, apparently, which would be a first. If they pick a woman to make any decision for college football,
It's going to be the generic woman, Condoleezza Rice, by the way. Okay. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, me too, because I can't imagine wanting anybody with any sense on this panel, so I can't imagine asking a woman to do it at all, because it's going to be a bunch of ignorant dudes. So if you get a woman, chances are she's going to have brains. They're not going to listen to her anyway.
Wait, you know what we should do?
Uh-oh.
Because Mark Cuban pitched the idea of doing this years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We should have the GSICS.
I like it.
We should pick every week our own top 10.
Our own top 10.
And then host our own version of the college football playoffs.
I agree. I like it because here's the thing. Our fan base, our listening base, are some of the most brilliant and intelligent minds in sports broadcast history.
Let the fans vote on it.
You know, exactly, and they should vote because, listen, everybody says the SEC gets an automatic bid, and that was part of the problem. But guess what's going to happen with this playoff committee thing?
It's going to be 2 SEC teams.
At least it's going to be 8 teams.
No, in the final. It's going to be 2 SEC teams.
Because Dollar Donuts, the final 8 teams, 3 of them or 4 of them are going to be SEC teams anyway.
Interesting note about the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Something like 33%.
33%. 64 in total, which was some amazing number more than any other. The SEC, the Southeastern Conference football, put more guys in the NFL this year via the draft than any other football conference in draft history.
And an interesting thing is, I read this on Twitter. I don't remember who this is from. It could be from Ian Rappaport or one of the multitude of NFL people I follow on Twitter, but it was an ingenious point. An SEC coach told a recruit, there are 3 conferences. There's the NFC, the AFC,
and the SEC. That, you know what? Quick recruiting story. Coming out of high school, sort of looking at trying to decide what school I want to go to. Football was not one of my sports that I was really seriously thinking about. It was just an opportunity to get my school paid for. That's all I was thinking about. And I actually went to visit 3 schools that were in the SEC. You get, at that time, we got 5 schools per sport before they condensed it down. And so of the 5 schools I went to for football, 3 were in the SEC.
What were the 3?
I can say this now. University of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
University of Tennessee, and University of Florida were the 3 SEC schools that I went to. And here was the thing. No one talked about academics. No one talked about major. What's your major? What you gonna do, son? What's going on with you?
Ray Perkins was a coach at Alabama at that time.
Was it Perkins or was it Curry when I was looking at coming out?
What year was this around?
This would have been 85, 86.
I think it was the tail end of Ray Perkins.
Maybe so, yeah, probably so.
Start of Curry, yeah.
I there's no way I was going to go to Alabama. Oh, you know what? I went to four schools because I went to Mississippi State because that's where I wanted to go. So my
because you're from Mississippi,
and I always love Mississippi State. So four of my five schools for football were SEC schools because I also went to Mississippi State for baseball. I visited a bit for baseball as well too. So you go there, and this is in the 80s, and the conversation is about playing against NFL quality talent. Learning the NFL game. This is in the 80s, back when Florida State was rocking the world. University of Miami was still rocking the world. This is in the 80s. So there's always this idea about what SEC schools mean. And now we're going to get this playoff. We're going to get this talk about this stuff. And they're going to pick these schools. And they're going to pick eight schools. And dollars to donut, three to four of the schools are going to be SEC schools. Dollars to donuts. That's what you're going to see. You're going to get one Pac-12 school or Pac-18 school or whatever that division is now out there, which probably means either USC or Oregon, depending on what happens. And then you'll get the one school from the other, the what they call it now, the Big East, the Big Sneeze.
There's the Colonial Athletic Conference, which is the ACC. The Big East was.
The Big East was, yeah.
And then there's the Big East, which is just basketball. Yeah.
And then you're going to get all the schools, then you're going to get Boise. Or Notre Dame as one of the other schools, just because they're independent.
Or Oregon.
Oregon's going to represent one of the schools out of the Pac-1800 or whatever it is. Yeah, 12. So, you know, and then you're going to get Notre Dame. It's going to be school number 8. You know, this is what's going to happen. You know, this is what's going to happen. And what we're going to see is a case of more political posturing, more about the cash out, more about the cash in. That's what's going to happen with this particular thing. I hope it does not turn out that way. I hope this does not make it to one of our episodes of GS I Told You So. But I got a feeling that it's going to make it there because it's the writing's on the wall. And we're gonna talk about that more when we come back in this particular episode of Gotta Say It.
Hey, folks, this is Matt Ryan, producer of GSI and overall nice person. You can follow GSI on Twitter at Gotta Say It Radio. You can also find us on Facebook by searching Gotta Say It, or you can go to our website, gottasayitradio.webs.com, for that and more information. Also, you can email us anytime you want, gottasayitradio@gmail.com, except for 4 a.m. Who emails someone at 4 a.m.? Seriously.
Welcome back to Gotta Say It on gottasayitradio.webs.com. How close did we come last year to seeing a replay of Alabama and Georgia in the national championship game?
Oh, we were close.
A lot of people felt like, you know, Georgia was a better team. Now, granted, Notre Dame was a better story. And, you know, we won't talk about a particular player for Notre Dame who had personal issues. We're going to leave that out of the story.
Starting the remake of Ghost Dad.
You know, so
I don't want to talk about that, but I want to talk about that though. Mm-hmm. Just as a Notre Dame fan,
mm-hmm.
it was really disheartening just to see that guy,
right?
The guy that was bringing Notre Dame football back to prevalence, mm-hmm. back to prominence,
to fall into that,
to fall into that, and whatever happened, because we're probably never going to know the real story until someone dies or someone just, you know, completely blurts it out,
right?
It's not a big blow to Notre Dame football because Notre Dame will cover they've shown that they can cover anything and move anything to get back to where they need to be.
Absolutely.
But just disheartening.
It's too easy for these kids, and I'm saying these kids, when you're coming out of high school, going to a big-time college program, that doesn't happen by accident. A lot of people have pumped you up along the way. A lot of people have reached for your attention along the way because they're looking past college. They're looking at what you're going to bring in once you get past playing on Saturdays to playing on Sundays. And in the case of a lot of guys, their checks, paychecks, and I'm not saying that with tongue firmly planted in cheek, but their Saturday paychecks are more than what they're going to make on Sundays. Some guys are getting compensated to play college ball at certain institutions. Some guys are bringing in more money there because they're not going to play professional ball. So that is their professional career. And you get to institutions like Notre Dame. And here's why this 18 playoff thing you know Notre Dame. If Notre Dame has a one-loss season, would be team number eight in this eight, because Notre Dame is the traditional football story that has transcended the entire game from back in the day when it was Harvard and Brown. You had Notre Dame. When you go through Michigan and Gerald Ford, and those two national championships Gerald Ford won with University of Michigan, Notre Dame was still around. When you go to the start of the era of
Bear
Bryant, Notre Dame was still a story. You go to the start of what happened in more recent history of the birth of the ACC, the Miamis and Florida States, Notre Dame was still around. Notre Dame's last national championship was 1984? 88. So, and even after that, even when those teams, when they went through those coaching debacles and bad coach decisions that went down between the hiring of this one, the firing of that one, the hiring of this one and the firing of that one, the name of Notre Dame has still remained. As you said before, Notre Dame has proven that they can survive all of whatever society or whatever mishaps are thrown at their way. So you know, if there's eight teams, if Notre Dame has one loss on their record, they're going to be team number eight. We know in the other teams, it's going to be whoever wins the SEC championship game and probably whoever lost in the SEC championship game. So that's at least two SEC teams. And if you get into terms of if it's between the SEC East and SEC West and the winner of the SEC East has no losses until they play Alabama, and the team that the SEC East team beat has one loss, they might be the third team in. Or the team that Alabama beats might be the third SEC team.
You could possibly have half of that 8-team playoff.
Be SEC team.
Be SEC, and then you have the Pac-12, and then you have the Big Ten. That will probably fill it out.
Maybe if you get a school like Clemson, a school that has that sort of history, that might go in there, and if they finish being ACC champions and they're undefeated and they win the ACC-SEC playoff game when they play against Missouri or whoever else is in the SEC now. I mean, goodness gracious, the SEC now has how many teams in it? But, you know, nobody's going to look at University of Missouri, even though they did a lot better than I thought they were going to do in their first year in the SEC. Texas Tech, another school, did a lot better than I thought they were going to do their first year in the SEC.
Well, that's because of Johnny Manziel.
Well, yeah. So, but when it comes down to the SEC, it's going to be talk of Alabama. It's going to be talk of Auburn. It's going to be talk of UGA. It's going to be talk of Florida. And eventually, maybe Tennessee might get back in the mix. You know, I think we're a long way from seeing Mississippi State, even though Mississippi State wasn't that bad this year either. Ole Miss is trying to find their stride again. So, you know, we're getting back to the days of those schools, those old powerhouses. They're all in one conference. So that statement of there's an NFC, AFC, and SEC, it's not that far away from reality.
It isn't.
So when you see this idea of a playoff, what this committee, 42-person or whatever many people committee is going to be, the one thing that college sports has shown us, their inability to work together. It's one thing when you have a booster at Oklahoma State who will come out and he will give the school $25 million to build a new basketball arena at Oklahoma State and decide, because I gave you that money, I decide who's the next coach. When they don't consult him about who's the next coach, he pulls his funding from the school as if it was like, okay, fine, you're not going to listen to me, I'll take my money back and sue the school for the money back. No one questions that. They look at those situations and say, oh, he's a crazy booster. Yeah, but guess what? Crazy boosters run half the league.
Yep.
So here you have a situation of this NCAA myth of the college athlete should be pure, should be this, should be that. And you don't see that. We see it being run like a mob, by the way. It's a mess. And this college football playoff thing, though I think it's going to be good for the game, when it totally plays out and you see the schools like Boise State, the schools like Oregon State, the schools that fall in that midway gap of being solid programs that might have won their conference, but because their strength of schedule or RPI or whatever other code word they come up with isn't as strong as a school in the SEC team, and they get left out, it's going to be more conversation. They're going to go to the "you fell on the toilet" bowl in Giacomo, Tennessee, you know, being shown on the CW.com. You know, it's the one thing that's always left out of this is the student athletes.
Yep.
Always. And Greg, you know what? Maybe it shouldn't matter. Maybe, you know what? It probably doesn't matter. But the reality of it is, if they think this is going to solve the problem, they are surely mistaken.
And I come from this in a weird perspective because I grew up around student athletes and I've worked with student athletes and I've announced college sports. And for the sacrifices these kids make, there should be some sort of compensation. And there are the old war horses that are in our business to say scholarships and all this other stuff make up for it, but it doesn't. Because
absolutely not. It sure does not.
Because in the words of Chris Webber, I don't have enough money to buy a hamburger and they're selling my jersey in the bookstore.
Yes.
There are organizations making money off of the names of people they have no right of making money off of. If you want to make it fair, and this isn't 100% fair, but this is some modicum of fairness. For every player you sell a jersey of, they get a cut. Might be as low as 5%, maybe as high as 20%, but they deserve a cut of having their name being sold on the back of a jersey being sold for as low as $85, as high as $300.
And if you don't give it to them right away,
put it in a trust.
Put in a trust. When you graduate, here's your check.
Yep. You build it all up and they can deposit maybe $100 from it at a time.
Yeah. Listen, for those who don't know, first of all, here's the thing. Those people who yell student scholarships are payment for the work that you do. Let me give you the reality of being a scholarship player just in football. We won't talk. We promise you an entire podcast on this. Here's what you do as a football player. Your team, your school, Division I programs generally had anywhere from 120 to 130 scholarships to give out every year. Notice I said every year. That's because the coach might sign Matthew to be wide receiver this year, and he signed his letter of intent. He's now committed to go to Williams University. But if the coach decides after Matthew's freshman year, you know what? I got another kid coming out that's a lot better and a lot stronger than you. I'm not renewing your scholarship. I'm going to sign this other kid. Matthew's now a sophomore with no scholarship. And guess what? He just can't go play for another school without sitting out a year. That's left out of the story. Also left out of the story is, as an athlete on student scholarship, you're not even allowed to work a work study job. So that means you are not allowed to work a job off campus to appear to have favoritism. Nor is anyone in your family, by the way, to work a job off campus that might be traced back to anyone connected to that institution. You're not allowed to work a job off campus or on campus. So here you are. You have your 12 to 15 credit school semester, which means you're in classes 15 hours a week. You're only allowed a total of 20 hours of practice time. You're allowed 5 hours of gym time, and you better take advantage of all of that. Otherwise, coach is not bringing you back the next year. Oh, by the way, mandatory 5 hours of tutoring time on the road or at home. And if you come from a big program where you have a media outlet pushing you all the time for interviews and this, that, you have to do that too. So your time is not your own. So that scholarship, by the way, that you might not have after this year because all of a sudden a taller, faster wide receiver just got brought in from another high school, is not always there. So it's not enough.
Servitude.
Exactly. And the idea of, as you put so eloquently, how much money is made off these athletes, how much money is made off these athletes and what's exactly done is just completely over the top. And we're just going to see more of this exposed now when we see this whole new playoff setup. I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong, but I don't think so. Thank you for listening to Gotta Say It Cast, number 750 at 5,744.
It's five.
Or number five. And again, with Matthew Ryan.
Hello.
My name is Marvin Williams. We go hard. Can you make it twice?
This has been a presentation of the GSI Radio Network.